we were getting to the end of the sugya, in which there had been a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether or not Avodah Zarah Shenishtabra Me'eleha is considered batel. So we're on Membeis Amud Beis at the top. So the Gemara is going to take one last stab with a very interesting sugya. And it's on the last word on the fourth line. Eisvei Rishimim Lakish Rabbi Yochanan. Kain Sheberosh Ha'ilan Shel Hekdesh. If you have a tree that somebody was makdesh, and on top of the tree there is a bird's nest. Apparently the bird made a nest. And when the bird makes a nest, obviously it breaks off branches, and it sews them together somehow, or glues them together, or stitches them together, and yet how you get a bird's nest.
So a tree that's hekdesh, what's the right way of using that tree?
So what's that? One second. So when a person is makdish a tree, the tree has kedusha. A person is not allowed to derive benefit from it. A person is not allowed to climb up on the tree to get something. That's a form of hana from the tree. What hekdesh will do with the tree eventually is let somebody redeem it. They'll pay money for hekdesh. The money will become kadosh, and the tree will be yotzei lechula. So the bird, obviously, the birds are not for them, and the birds, even the kosher ones, and they, right now the Gemara is assuming they break off twigs and branches from this tree, and the birds don't know that it's hekdesh, and they build themselves nests. Okay. So now the question is, you want to come along and you want to take the nest. Well, the problem, obviously, is, it would seem, that that nest belongs to hekdesh, because it was broken off from branches from the tree. So the Gemara says, the Braisa says as follows, it's actually, I think, a Mishnah in Me'ilah, that the kain sheberosh ha'ilan shel hekdesh lo nehenin v'lo mawalin. You may not get hana from the kain, from the nest on top, but you don't violate me'ilah either. Now, as a general rule, perhaps 100% of the time, not just the rule, but certainly almost always, whenever the Mishnah or the Gemara says about a particular form of benefit from hekdesh, that lo nehenin v'lo mawalin, that means that it's asur midrabanan only. Because if it were something that were asur min ha-Torah to get benefit, to get hana, then if you violated the getting of the hana, you'd be moel. Moel means you now have to bring, if you did it b'shogeg, you have to bring a karbon, you have to pay back the hana that you got, the benefit that you got, you have to add on a chomesh. That's if you do it b'shogeg, b'mezid, whatever the punishment may be, you get malkos or something like that. So whenever the Mishnah says, or the Gemara says, lo nehenin, lo nehen v'lo mo'alin, it means it's also mid Rabbanon. The Rabbanon said you're not allowed to get hana, but if you do get hana, you don't bring a korban me'ila, because the Rabbanon cannot let you bring a korban asham when it's voluntary, when it's not really obligated by the Torah. So that's what these words
why
mean.
Why would they answer it? Why would they make both?
So the simple answer might be, Rashi, I think, says, is that if they let you get benefit from the nest, you might climb up on the tree to get it. And that would be getting hana from the tree. Okay. So now, the Braisa continues, the Mishnah continues. It says the following, Vishel shel ashera, if it's an ashera tree, yatis bakone. If you have a long pole, right, and you can sort of just flick the nest off. Right now they're assuming the nest is empty. Your interest is in the wood. There's nothing in the nest. The birds are gone, the eggs are gone, the chicks are gone, everything's gone. But you want the wood? So yatis bakana, you're allowed to sort of get a long stick. Well, you can't climb the tree, and you can knock it off with the pole. Kasat, now the Gemara explains what was the assumption that Reish Lakish made when he asked this as a kasha against Rabbi Yochanan. Kasal gadaitach, kegon sheshibra mimenu eitzim v'kinsa bahem. Where assumption is that where did the bird's nest come from? Where did the wood, the twigs come from? Came from the tree itself. The bird broke off wood and it made a nest out of it. V'katani, and the Mishnah says, yatis bakane. You can sort, yatis bakane tells you how to get it, but it means it's motabana. It means if I can get the nest off the tree, I'm allowed to get hana. So the question is, that's an avodah zarah, the Gemara says. I'm sorry, the Gemara doesn't spell it out. That it's avodah zarah shenishtabra me'eleha. This is an avodah zarah that was literally a bird did it, but it means a person didn't do it. It happened on its own, and the Mishnah is saying that it's mutter to get hana from it. So that should prove that Reish Lakish in fact is correct. That avodah zarah shenishtabra me'eleha is muteres. So the Gemara answers no. Hacha b'maya skinan kegon ta'isi eitzim me'olama. That the kinsabahin. No, this bird, this was a frum bird. And the bird did not want to be, well, it's not such a fun bird, because if, even if you bring the wood from elsewhere, you're still putting the nest in, you know, in a tree, in a hektesh tree, in an asherah tree. But didn't want to violate a double avera. Only wanted to get a limited hana. So the bird took the wood, gathered the wood from elsewhere, which is actually not some of, I don't know what how common that is in terms of trees. I know that when I leave my mailbox, my little mailbox open in front of my house during the summer, it's very common. I come back the next day and I've got all sorts of stuff in there, you know, that the bird was trying to make a nest in there. So it's not, and obviously my mailbox, my metal mailbox doesn't grow anything. So the bird is collecting stuff from various places and finds a place to make a nest. So that's apparently what it did here. Now, if that's the case, then we understand why is it mutter to get hana from this cane, because it's not from the Asherah tree. It happens to be sitting on top of the Asherah tree, so you're not allowed to climb the Asherah tree. But if you can take a pole and knock it off, then it's fine, and there's no question.
What does that tell us about?
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Sam.
You go. Go. There you go.
No, I just wanted. So why doesn't he say yatiz bakana by the case of hekdesh?
Ah, so that's what the Gemara is about to ask. Oh. The Gemara is about to ask that question. The Gemara is going to say, the Gemara is going to sort of frame the. Let's see what the Gemara is going to do with this. So the Gemara now says the following: Hachi nami. Deka nami. Now, if it makes sense, it must be that it brought the wood from Eltzer. Dekatani gabe hektesh lo nehen and v'lo mo'alin. It says that by hektesh, it's only awesome in the Rabbanon. Iyam rispishlama da isi eitzimei alma. Hainu dekatani gabe hektesh lo nehen and v'lo mo'alin. If, in fact, you say that it's not wood from the tree itself, but it's wood from Eltzer, then I understand why lo nehen and v'lo mo'alin. Lo nehen and midrabbanon v'lo mo'alin midaraisa. The halokadishe. The reason why it's not Asur Menatora is because it's wood not from the Hekdesh tree, it's wood from somewhere else. So why do they make an Isur the Rabbanon? Again, it's Rashi says Lonan, and this could have gone earlier also, that maybe you'll get Hana from the other wood in the tree. Apparently by Avodah Zarah, Rashi says people want to stay far away from Avodah Zarah. We're not afraid. If you allow him to take the bird's nest, he'll be nana from the rest of the tree. But Hekdesh is not intrinsically ma'us. It's the same concept the Gemara has, why they required Bidigas Chametz, why they didn't allow Bittul to suffice. Generally speaking, there's no other time, no other issur that you have to remove from your possession, and there's no gzeirim in the Rabbanon not to keep something around, not to keep pork around your house, lest you come and eat it. But there is a gzeirah to do bidigas chametz, even if you after you did bittul. Bittul should suffice to do away with the Torah's prohibition of owning chametz, of lo bal yirah bal yimatzeh. But the reason why the chachamim require bidigas chametz, the Gemara says, because lo bedilei in shimineh, because you eat chametz all year round. Chametz is not, it's not mos, it's not disgusting, it's not, to someone who only keeps kosher, so shrimp is presumably not particularly attractive, you know, or pork, it's something repulsive to someone who's raised from never eaten non-kosher food, so like, who would want to eat this? But chametz, you eat all year round. There's nothing intrinsically problematic about chametz. So Rashi says the same thing here. He says that people, when it comes to hektesh, there's nothing, hektesh is not, I mean, it's the same materials, but hektesh is, you know, hektesh is a good thing. But avodah zara is a terrible thing. Nobody would be nana. That's what Rashi says. But the Gemara says that it must be that the wood comes from elsewhere, because if it didn't, then how could you say lo nan and velo mal, and this should be full-fledged me'ila, because the wood came from a hektesh tree, it belongs to hektesh. So now the Gemara says, no, midi irya. That's not necessarily true. Hocha begidulin haba'in la'achar mikan askinan. No, you know what? It's not that the bird took wood from the tree that you were makdish. The bird took wood that, how do we know this? I don't know. It took wood that grew later. Okay, let's say you had a tree, somebody was makdish, and it was a neatly trimmed tree, and all the small little branches were gone, only the thick branches. And now, the short, thin branches grow first, before they get thick. And then you see, that's what the bird took. It took these little thin twigs. So even though it comes from the tree, the Gemara says, it's gidulim haba la'achar mikan. Now you'll say, okay, so what good does that do? What happens if I make a tree hektesh, and then apples grow on the tree? What's the status of those apples? So I would have said they're hektesh. However, the Gemara says the following. That there's no me'ila by gidulin. The assumption is, so how can that be? So the answer is that a person can be makdish, when a person is makdish the tree, he has in mind, he's only being makdish the tree for the purposes of the wood that's there, but he's reserving the rights of things that grow subsequently. In other words, he's in partnership with Hekdesh, in fact, and Hekdesh gets the goof of the wood, and he gets the payers that come afterwards. He doesn't intend to be makdish those. So there's probably still an issue of the Rabbanah, because the Rabbanah don't want you doing that, as you can imagine, that's very easily could lead to disaster. But it means that me'ikar hadin, the gidulim habayim lachar mikan, those things that grow after you will makdish the tree, don't actually have the status of hekdesh min haTorah, and that's why lo nanav lo malin. And when it comes to avodah zarah, while it would have the status of avodah zarah, while even if it did have the status, let's say it has the status of avodah zarah, it doesn't matter because the bird broke them. And again, this is the havamina. Now, the maskana right now, the Gemara is saying you can't prove anything from the Mishnah. But what the Gemara was thinking initially, when it thought this was a proof to Reish Lakish, is that you're talking about things that were gidulim haban lamach or mikan. It doesn't really matter which ones by the Asherah. Things that were broken off from the tree, and because they were broken from an avodah zarah thing, they no longer have the status of avodah zarah. And when it came to hekdesh, these things grew after you were makdish the tree, and therefore min haTorah they have no kedusha, but min derabbanan they prohibited you from getting hana. So that's how we would have read. We could have read, in fact, and now we could have. We could read the Mishnah that way, but it's not compelling. You could also read the Mishnah saying, no, as the Gemara answers for Rabbi Yochanan, that the bird brought the twigs and the materials from elsewhere, and therefore the only problem is that it's in this tree. So by Asherah, they were not goes there at all. As long as you don't climb the tree, you just take the long pole and you flick it off. And by the and when it comes to the hekdesh tree, they were afraid people not badil me hekdesh, and therefore they said that you're not midrabanan, you're not allowed to take those twigs. That's what the Gemara's first answer, first approach is. So now,
since we're talking about just taking the nest itself, is there an assumption that if I could somehow get to the top of the tree, I could do shilul hakan haken without any hesitation? Because we're talking here about the nest, not anything in the nest.
So my assumption is that, yes. My assumption is that certainly min haTorah, the mitzvah would still be applicable. And the Gemara is not quite going to talk about that in the next line, but it's sort of, because the Gemara is now going to give another teretz. The Gemara didn't like the suggestion. I don't know why. Again, I'm not an expert in bird nest building and where they take their materials from. But the Gemara doesn't like the idea that you have to say, oh, it took the twigs from elsewhere. In other words, if there are twigs in this tree, you know, birds aren't stupid, and presumably they're going to take the twigs that are closest to save their energy and not have to drag them whatever distance. So it seems a little bit nukimta, it seems a little bit forced to say that the birds took the twigs from a different tree. And that's what the Mishnah is assuming. So now the Gemara comes up with a different answer, which is, Rabbi Abo Am Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Abo and then Rabbi Yochanan gave a different answer. Ma yatiz? Yatiz be'efrochem. No. You can't, it's not the cane, it's not the wood, the nest that you're taking, it's you're going to flick the chicks out. I guess you flick them out and catch them as they fall or something like that, because they can fly away, you're not going to get them that way. But yatiz be'efrochem. In which case, again, you have to say that obviously the birds don't have the status of either avodah zarah or hekdesh. By avodah zarah, they weren't gozer. By hekdesh, they were gozer that you shouldn't l'chatchila take them. And then, so the assumption here is, as Rashi says, if you look at Rashi, the long Rashi, Dibar Maschel, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Yochanan, Mahader l'tarutze l'tiyuvtei b'shinuya acharina. The Gemara here is trying to answer the Reish Lakish's kasha against Rabbi Yochanan with a different approach. And he says, "La'olam lo tukma b'shinuye dechika." You should not make the Mishnah work with a shinui dachok, with a sort of forced answer. The icy eitzim alma, that the bird brought wood from somewhere else. Vafilu hachi, nonetheless, even though the bird took the wood from this tree, lo tiyalef b'nei heter shivre ovdei kochavim. You can't learn from this, you can't prove from this Reish Lakish's position that if avodah zarah gets broken, that it's butter. Why? The hata kantani yatis bakane a efrochim koi lo a eitzim. It's talking about flitting the birds away, you know, flicking the birds out of the tree and catching them. It's not talking about the wood itself of the cane. Okay, we don't have to read further in Rashi. So that's how Rashi reads the conclusion of the point of the Gemara. And then the Gemara concludes with one more sort of qualification within this second teretz. Amale Rabbi Yaakov, the Rabbi Yirmiyah Batachlifa, Asper Locha, let me explain to you actually. Be'afrochim kan v'kan mutar, be'beitzim kan v'kan isurin. So he suggests actually that there's no distinction Between Hekdesh and Asherah, even though the Bryce, the Mishnah seems to present a distinction that one is Mutter and one's Asamid Rabbanan. He says, no, there's actually no distinction between Hekdesh and Avodah Zarah. They're actually talking about two different cases. One is talking about the chicks, Ephrochem, and one is talking about if they're still eggs. By eggs, they prohibited taking the eggs both from an Asherah tree, meaning flicking them out with that, and from a Hekdesh tree. Why? Because the eggs are much more fragile, and we're afraid that someone's going to, you know, panic and go climb the tree and to take the eggs. So therefore, they just prohibited midrabanan taking the eggs out of a nest. But if it's an Ephroach, you know, he can flap a little bit, you can catch him, and so on. So by Ephroach, and both by Hekdesh and by Atzei Asherah, so it's Mutter. This has this last detail. It does away with the need for Rashi's answer about the difference between Hekdesh and Avodah Zarah, that one they're Bedilimine and one that they're not Badilimine. Okay. And Amar Ravashi, Vafrochem Shetzricha Le'iman Kebetzim Damu. Ravashi says that if you're dealing with chicks that still need their mother, and again, I don't know what this means, if it means that they can't fly yet, I'm not sure that's what it means.
It sounds like the chicks are not connected to the tree in any way, because if you can flick them, that means that they could fly. They're almost there.
Right, so is our assumption here that these chicks cannot fly very well, but they can fly a little bit, so they can't get away from you, but they could
get to the tree.
Right, okay, that could be. But again, it's midrabanan still. In other words, it seems to be a concern that unless Rav Ashi is adopting a totally different approach that precedes him. In other words, Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Yochanan said, we're talking about not the nest, the birds. Rav Yaakov comes along and says to Rav Yirmi Bar Tachlifa, guess what? I want to explain to you, though, now that Rav Yochanan said that, you should understand that it's not the way we said and assumed until now, that there's a difference between Hekdesh and Asherah, but rather they're the same. But the Mishnah says that Asherah is Mutter, to be Defrochem, and the Hekdesh is Aser. The answer is it depends upon whether or not you're dealing with chicks or eggs. Now, at this point, I think you have to say like Rashi, because the chicks may still need to be in the nest. Until Rav Ashi further qualifies what chicks means, right now it's all chicks versus all eggs. And therefore, if all chicks are mutter, the assumption has to do, I assume the way Rashi says, that by eggs are much more fragile, we're afraid that they're going to break. Rav Ashi comes along and says, you know what? No, that Ephrochem that still need their mother are like Beitz and Damu. Now, I could just say, again, it means that they are more likely just to fall straight to the ground. It's kind of hard to say them. I suppose that they can fly a little bit, which is really not arguing what came before. Rav Ashi is just explaining further. Or what you're suggesting, which is possible for Rav Ashi, is a totally different approach, that it's no longer a question of fear of climbing up on the tree, but even if it's midrabanan, it's a question of conceptually, is it midrabanan part of the tree? And if the chicks need to be there because they can't fly at all, they're like eggs, and like eggs, they're not part of the tree, but midrabanan, because they have to be there, the Chachamim treat them as part of the tree. That's possible. Okay, fine. Any questions about that? It remains a machlokas Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan about Avodah Zarah Shenishtabra Me'eleha. The Balei HaTosfos point out we pasuk like Rabbi Yochanan, which is not a surprise. We almost always pasuk like Rabbi Yochanan against Reish Lakish, that Avodah Zarah Shenishtabra Me'eleha is Asura. Yet the interesting thing is we also pasuk like Shmuel, that the Mishnah is talking about even Shivrei Avodah Zarah. In other words, the Mishnah said that Amotzei Shivrei Tzlamim are permissible. Shmuel said, Hu hadin l'shivrei Avodah Zarah, that if you find Avodah Zarah, which was broken, it's Mutter. So the question is, how do you put these two together? How can you paskin like Shmuel, and at the same time paskin like Rabbi Yochanan? In fact, the whole, when you look at the way the Gemara explained the way the Mishnah with Kashas on Shmuel, he sounds a lot more like Reish Lakish. I think the Balei HaTosfos comments, I think the answer is actually rather simple. Which is, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish are talking about a situation where you know that the tzlamim were broken on their own. You know that the goy didn't break them. And in that case, Rabbi Yochanan may hold something, maybe this is the Ritva says this, that Yeyosh Shalom Midas is not considered Yeyosh. Shmuel is talking about a case where you find Shivrei Avodah Zarah. And Shmuel would say, listen, if you find them, you don't assume that they broke Me'eleim. It's more probable in many cases that in fact somebody smashed it and went on his merry way. It's also possible within Shmuel's world that the guy knew about it, even if he didn't actually break it himself. So that may be why you can possibly like Shmuel, that in a situation where we don't know that it broke on its own, we find it broken, we can assume that it was broken deliberately Or that there was an act of bittul. Whereas once you know it's nishtabra emelah and the guy doesn't know about it, so then you can no longer assume that there was bittul, in which case you can pass like both like Shmuel and like Rabbi Yochanan.
One question. Yeah. I've always heard of Avodah Zarah, and it has a negative connotation. Here it's almost like a neutral. Avodah Zarah means it's not from the tree, it's just an outside influence. Right? You're saying Avodah Zarah, and we always... Whenever we hear Avodah Zarah, it has a negative connotation, no?
Right, but Shivrei Avodah Zarah, we assume that there's bittul. So Avodah Zarah can be undone. Right? It can be undone. So that's the only situation we're going to talk about in Mutter, is when the assumption is that there was bittul. Am I understanding your question or not?
I always understood Avodah Zarah is implied having to do with worship of pagan gods and things like
right.
that.
Right.
But here it sounds like Avodah Zarah means it's not part of the tree, it's Avodah, it's a neutral, something
it's
came from somewhere else.
Asherah is
it.
Asherah
was worship.
No, it's worship. An Asherah is a tree that's worshipped.
Okay.
So the tree itself is definitely Avodah Zarah. I'm sorry, I should have been clear about that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part. Okay.
Okay, now the Mishnah goes back to finding stuff. Hamotze Kalim, if you find now not a little idols, but you find Kalim, but Va'alehem, inscribed on them, is a Tsuras Chama, Tsuras Levana, or Tsuras Darkon. The image of a sun, the image of a moon, or the image of a dragon. The Gemara will talk about what a dragon is. So the Mishnah says, Yodichem Liyam HaMelach. You know what you do with these Kalim? They're Aser Bana. You take them to the Yam HaMelach. Right. Well, right. I'd be curious if archaeologists have gone digging the Yam HaMelach to see whether or not really there are these tons of Kalim. So, okay. So anyway, they also probably never envisioned that they would be mining, I think, potash out of the Yam HaMelach. So now we're all getting hana from the Avodah Zarah. Okay. God's recycling somehow.
There's no bittul by
Avodah Zarah. No, not once a Jew owns it. No, it would appear not. There may be bittul for hektesh, but there's no bittul for Avodah Zarah. When you violate me'ilah, particularly b'shogeg normally, any hektesh that doesn't have kedushas haguf, then it's not a karban or it's not a kli shareis, it's yotze lechulin. That's the process. That's what your me'ilah is about, that you emotzi lechulin. It's only behemos, only karbanos and klei shareis don't. But the Gemara also has a drasha somewhere, not in this parak, I think in the fourth parak, I think Dafnan Beis or something, ubo bo pritzim v'chululuha. I think it's from Yechezkel. The idea that the question is, you know, the Gemara has some comment about all the gold in the world, there's the gold of Yerushalayim mixed in with it, so how are we allowed to get hana from any gold? And there's some comment about how when the goyim came in, when the mechal of the mikdash, they would bo pritzim v'chululuha. Now, we usually often take chilul to mean the negative sense of profane, but lechalel can also be to redeem. It can be to remove the kedusha from something and transfer it to something else. So maybe with the goyim's conquest, you know, in effect, remove the status. It may, not any different than the concept that Amon Amoav Tiru Besichon, that the Jews were warned against capturing territory from Amon Amoav. It's found in the Torah, Bnei Parshas Devarim. And yet, when Sichon attacked Moab, and he took a chunk of their territory, Sichon was from the Emori, was from the Amorites, and there was a mitzvah to attack them, and when they attacked Sichon, so the land that they took, which had originally been Moabite land, was permissible to them. We say, Amon u'Moav, tiharu b'Sichon. When Sichon conquered the land, he purified it of its Isser status. So, sometimes conquest does away with things, but I don't think that conquest does away with Avodah Zarah, that's already Aser B'Hana and unbattleable.
And what about volume?
What about what? What was your question?
For the question?
In terms of like
Batol Bishi. Oh, no. So in Torah, there is Bittul. Midrabanan, there's no Bittul for Avodah Zarah, at least Mimimino. Like by Yai Nesach, as the example of that, right? Yai Nesach, which is worse than Avodah Zarah, because Yai Nesach, if it's really Yai Nesach, is what we call Tikrobes Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah Gufa, there's no Bittul if it belonged to a Jew. But there is if it belonged to a guy. Tikrovis have a desire, there's no bittul at all. Yet Minatorah, Yai Nesach is batel, you know, berof. So the fact that Yai Nesach is not batel, you know, even be'elef, it's osa b'mashu, is a din d'rabbanan, and it only applies by mimimino, not by mimishinimino. If some Yai Nesach falls into your stew, and you can't taste the wine, so then it's mother. That's the shishan.
What about the chemical and physical properties of the item? that you committed the heck this change. In other words, and you can't redo it. You can't undo it.
What do you mean? Give me an example.
You can't put it back together again.
You can. Let's say gelatin. I don't know. You take the bones of the animal and you say this is Hegner's.
Right.
But once you make gelatin, you know, the chemical and physical properties have changed, but you can't make it back into the bones.
That's not, I mean, and I don't think changes anything. In other words,
would it still be Hegner? I mean, would it still be
Yeah, I think so. When you shecht an animal. Which is, let's say, kachim kachim, the emurim, you can't put it back, but we don't say that it's not hektish anymore. In other words, shinoi is a concept that's kona when you intend to make a kinyan. But I'm not even sure that that's actually relevant in this case. In other words, when you steal from hektish, when I steal from you, so if the object is still extant, I have to return that object. Right? When we talk about shinoi being kona, it means that the object is no longer extant. The Torah says, "Veishivas hagzela asher gazal ke'ein shegazal." You have to return the object, but if it no longer exists, because I mean, and we say that shinoi means it's a different object now. But I violate the gezel not when I make a shinoi. I violate the gezel when I take your object, even though I'm still obligated to return to you. It's called the kinyan gezel. And by me'ila, I think it's the same din. In other words, whether or not there would by me'ila anyway, I'm not sure. Let me give you a better example. If you did me'ila b'meizid, doesn't remove the kedusha from the object, but you're chayiv to return it. I presume that when you do me'ila b'meizid, if these gloves belong to Hektish and I stole them, I assume that right now, because it wasn't Yotzei Lechulin, I'm obligated to return the gloves themselves, even though whatever my punishment is. If I make a shinoi in the gloves, then I don't have to return the gloves anymore because the gloves don't exist. The gloves I stole don't exist. So I don't think that issue is relevant here. Okay. So anyway, so the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Sha'al ha-mechubad ha-masurim, Sha'al ha-mevuzim mutarim. He says that it depends. You know, the assumption of the Mishnah was that if there's a kli with a sun or a moon or a dragon on it, the guy will worship the kli because he's worshiping the image. And if anything else, we don't assume that if it's on a kli. If it's standalone is one thing, but if it's on a kli, okay. And Rabbi Shimon Leo comes along and says that this assumption is only correct, that you have to assume it was nevad if it was a mechubad kli. You know, if it was what we would call, to take an example, an avit shel meimei raglayim. If it was a porta potty, that's what they used to use. An avit is some type of a kli, and they would use it for urinating in. So you would not say that if you find the sun on that they worship that sun, because that's alam avuzim. You know, if it were on a fancy goblet that would be served, you know, used at a banquet, so then the assumption is they would bow to that image. Okay. So now the Gemara asks the following question. Are you suggesting that these are the only... It's a funny havam, you know. Are you suggesting that these are the only images that the goyim worship? Vihatanya, viriminhi. We have a braisa that teaches. Hashochet l'shum horim, l'shum gvaos, l'shum yamim. L'shum naharas, l'shum midbar, l'shum chama, l'shum levana, l'shum kochav mazalos. I'll explain these in a second. I mean, it's the translation. L'shum Michael Saragada, L'shum Shil Shulkatan, Harei Eluziv Chemesim. L'shum, firstly, is the same thing as L'shem. So if you sacrifice something and your intent is to consecrate it to one of these things, that's Avodah Zarah. One of the examples, the mountains, the hills, the seas, the rivers, now, the deserts. The reason why the Brisa is listing these examples is what makes these distinct is that they're not Neser Bana. If I take this, if I decide this recorder is going to become my Avodah Zarah, and I bow to it, and assuming it's mine, the Avodah Zarah is now Aser Bana. But if I own land, and I bow to the land doesn't become Aser Bana. The halacha is the Mishnah later, I think, in the parrot, Abayt habdonis kol ha-makomos asher avdu sham ha-goyim asher atem yorashim osam. You should destroy all of the places that the nations worshipped them, the places which you are inheriting, es Elohehem. It's an interrupting clause. You should destroy their gods. Al heharim haramim ve'al hagvaos v'sachas kol eitz ranan. On the high mountains and on the hills and underneath every shady tree. But the way Chazal very cleverly darshan here is they read the word Elohim. There's a whole clause in between that sort of interrupts the flow of the beginning of the first part of the pasuk. Abei te abedun es kol hamikomos asher avdu shem hagoyim es Elohim. But it's interrupted with asher atem yorshim osam. So they darshan es Elohim al hehorim velo hehorim Elohim. They run the stop sign. They run the esnachta to put es Elohim al hehorim together, meaning the gods that are on the mountains, but not the mountains if they're their gods. You don't have to destroy the mountain. So if the guy decides to make Mount Everest his god, you don't say Mount Everest is Aser Bahana. Right? So things that are a part of the natural landscape that have not been fundamentally altered and controlled by human beings, so are not, even if the guy worships them, it's not Asarbana. So you would have thought that maybe if you slaughter something to them, to Mount Everest, it's not Asarbana either. It's not the Krovus of Avodah Zarah, because Mount Everest isn't really Avodah Zarah, because Mount Everest isn't Netzar, because if it really weren't Avodah Zarah and you worshipped it, it should be Asar. So the Bryce is telling us that no, that there's a distinction between that which is, you can have something that's not Netzar, but the act is still Avodah Zarah. And therefore, if a man slaughters something to Mount Everest, or to the, you know, to the hills or whatever, or to the Atlantic Ocean or to the Sahara Desert, it's that which he slaughters is asur bana. The act is also one that makes him liable for capital punishment. So that's what the Mishnah says. For all of these things, I mean, you could just imagine if someone slaughters something to the Chama, to the Levana, right? We're going to say the sun is now asur bana. Okay. We have to move to the dark side of the moon. That's the only place we can live now. All right. What's that?
Who is Michal?
Michal is an angel. Michal Sarhagadol. Okay, and L'shem Shil Shokatan is a little worm. Now, the truth is also, when it comes to Baalei Chaim, if you worship your cow, by bowing to it, it's not Neser Bana. You have to slaughter it. You have to do a Maisa to the cow to change it a little bit. There it actually matters for the Avodah Zarah to Aser the Baalei Chaim. If you worship a cow, the way we know, by the way, that it's Mutar Bana, I think this is the way we know, is that if you worship a cow, it's Aser to bring it as a carbon. It's called the Nevad. And the fact that it's Asur L'Gavoa means it's Mutar L'Hadya. The fact that the Torah has to tell us that you can't bring it as a carbon shows you you're allowed to get Hana from it as a private individual as long as it's not being used as a carbon.
And can you, the offspring of that cow?
You asked too many questions.
Wow. That's the purpose of the Gemara. The Gemara pushes the edges.
So I know. I just didn't want to answer the question because I remember. I think it's a sugya. I think the sugya actually comes up in Temura. In Zevezeg Gorem, about Vlados, Vlad Trefa. There is, I don't know if they talk about a Vlad HaNevad or not. The postures would be, by the way, it should be Mutter for a very simple reason, which is it's not that the animal's Asapana. The reason, presumably, the reason why you can't bring it is because it's Maus. It's disgusting, right? It's been consecrated for the Zara. How can you now bring this as a, you know, it's been worshipped as an Avodah Zara. How, in fact, you don't have to worship it. If you mukta, we say that a mukta also. Rashi quotes this in the Gemara Yikra. He quotes very briefly some of the drushos from Toras Kohanim about the things that are excluded. So he mentions mukta and nevan. Mukta is even if the guy sets it aside for an avodah zara. Even though he didn't actually worship it, it's maus. It's disgusting. Right now, it's been consecrated for avodah zara. Even though it's mutar bana right now, how can you bring this as a carbon? There's one case in Tanakh where they actually did, but that was a harah shah, Gidon. When he was told as part of his rebellion, you know, at night he went and he slaughtered the Gemara says he violated a lot of things, were all harah shah, all sorts of things that rules in Karbanos he violated. But one, it was the cow they were fattening up to slaughter for Avodah Zarah. So he went and he slaughtered that in the middle of the night. So anyway, the answer, I don't know for sure, but I would imagine the Vlad of an Evidus Mutter. But all of these things, even though the object itself doesn't become Usr, the mountain doesn't become Usr, the Shilshul, the little worm doesn't become Usr, the sun doesn't become Usr, Michal Saragadol doesn't do anything, it's not tangible, he's not tangible. Even so, Hare Ilaziv Chaymesim. So you see what? That people worship everything. So why do you limit yourself to Chama and Levana on the side of the Kli? If you assume that people worship images that were not made standalone but are on the sides of Kli, Kalim, why are you not concerned about Kalim with these other images as well? That was the Gemara's question. So Amar Baye, Miflach Lechol Damashkechei Polche. A guy finds an Avodah Zarah. Okay, so he finds an image, they'll worship anything. Okay? But Meitzer mafalchi, to go out of your way to put an image on a kli that you're going to worship it. Then he says Meitzer mafalchi, hani tlasa the chashivi. These three very important symbols: the sun, the moon, and the dragon. Tsairi lahu upalchi lahu. They will engrave them and worship it on the kli. However, midi acharina. I got to do better on this. L'midia harina l'noiba alma avdi lahu. Any other image they make for aesthetic purposes, but they don't actually make. They're not going to make it to worship. Okay, so that's where the Gemara leaves the mission right now. So now the Gemara, Rav Sheshes creates problems. Mankit Rav Sheshes chumrei masniyosa v'tani. Rav Sheshes was mankit, means nakat, means to grab a hold of, means he was trying to create a handle for chumrei masniyasa. Rashi writes either stringencies not stringency. Mishnayis chamuros means difficult mishnayis. In other words, seemingly contradictory things. Reish Lakish was trying to put them all together in one clear, organized, consistent structure. Tosus says that the word chumrei just means klal, it means rules. Either way, Rav Sheshis is collecting mishnayis. Why is Rav Sheshis collecting mishnayis? Rav Sheshis was blind. He had a phenomenal memory. The Gemara in Erevin says that when Rav Sheshis and Rav Chista used to meet one another, they used to both tremble. Rav Sheshis was afraid of Rav Chista's charifus, how sharp he was, and Rav Chista was afraid of Rav Sheshis's bekias. Right? The Gemara there tells a story about some Amora who was unhappy learning with his Rebbe because, you know, he went to learn, I think, with Rav Sheshis or something like that, and the Rebbe was very upset and hurt, and he said, listen, I ask you, Akasha, you know, and you gave me a very fancy teretz from Pilpul, and then somebody comes up with a brisa, when I go to Rav Sheshis, he just gives me a brisa, tells me what the din is, right? And then the Gemara goes on to tell the story, he says, challenge me, and he asks him a question, he gives him a Pilpul to answer the question, and then somebody quotes a brisa that's against it. So he said, Tanya, what can I do if it's against what I just said? Right, there's this polemic that runs throughout the Bavli generally about knowledge versus analysis, if you want to call it Sinai versus Oker Har. But be that as it may, Rav Sheshis, because, and he's not the only case, we find very frequently in the Gemara, Tanoim, and I say Tan, I don't mean the Mishnaic sage, a Tana who lived in the Amoraic period was someone whose job was to recite Mishnais and Brises. He memorized them. In other words, the other guys in the base Medrash, including some of the Amoraim, well, they knew, but they didn't always have the precise formulation, language. So when you see Tani Tana Kamei De'ex, that expression, it means a Tana taught a Brisa or a Mishnah in the presence of X, and then the sugya goes on to analyze it. So it's very common to find Tanaim who are blind. Why? Because when people lose one faculty, their other elements, you know, the oral memory tends to be strengthened by usage and whatever else. You also know Rav Sheshis was blind. He and Rav Yosef were the two people who did or didn't read the Haggadah for their families in Pesachim. It's a question of whether Magid and Matzah, Bizman HaZeh, is the Raisa or the Rabbanon. So if a blind person is not Chayav in a Torah, it's a Machlokas. There's a Machlokas from Meir Rav Yehuda where the blind people are Pata from all mitzvahs, at least mitzvahs HaSeh for sure, maybe more Minat Torah and only Chayav in the Rabbanon, or the Chayav Minat Torah or not. So the Gemara in Arvei Pesachim says that talks about the question of whether Magid in the mitzvah of Sipur Tzias Mitzrayim and Matzah is the Reis of Bizman HaZeh or only Midrabanan, and that is tied to the question of Rav Sheshis and Rav Yosef, whether they would in fact be Motzi their families Magid because they were blind. Okay, so anyway, so it's not surprising that Rav Sheshis here is, you know, working through collections of Mishnayis and lumping things together, amalgamating things, because that's what he did. So, man kiv Rav Sheshis chumrei masnayasa v'tani. Kol ha-mazalos mutarim. All mazalos are mutar. Now, he doesn't say mutar in what respect? In what context? Chutz mi-mazal cham olavana. Except for the sun and the moon. V'chol ha-partzufim mutarim. All facial images are permissible. Chutz mi-partzuf adam. Except for a human face. V'chol ha-tzuros mutaros. Chutz mi-tzuros darkon. All shapes of, let's say, animals are permissible, except for the image of a dragon. So now, the question is, what is mutter and asr? What's asr about these things? What is it that's being prohibited? So the Gemara says the following. Amar mar. So the Gemara is going to pick apart the brisa. Kol hamazalos mutorn chutz mimazal cham olavana. B'maya skinan, what is the isr here? Ilema be'ose, if it's a prohibition of making an image of the sun and the moon. What do you mean only the sun and the moon? Iba ose kala mazalos mishari. Are you allowed to make any of the other heavenly bodies? The hoksiv, lo sasun iti. Now, a word about the pshat in this pasuk. Just to give you an analogy to appreciate, first some a more easier example you can appreciate. The trup has three purposes in the Torah, in Tanakh. Purpose number one is for the music. That's what most people who learn to read for the bar mitzvah know about it. That is the least important function. The second function, more important but maybe still not the most important, is the trup tells you where the accent on the words are. Now that is useful for us, but for someone who's a native Hebrew speaker, it's not usually necessary because he knows where the accents are. Perhaps the most important function of the trup is actually to provide the punctuation in pasuk. I don't just mean the sof pasuk or the esnach, the end, and the misnach in the middle, which could either be a period or a semicolon. But even within the other trup, there is a system, there's a hierarchy of trup. Bigger pauses, lesser pauses, non-pauses. And the way the trup is used actually teaches you how to break down the verse into smaller and smaller units. Now, some Bali Kriya will be aware of certain obvious things, and I want to cite one famous example, where the trup that we have reflects a certain interpretation, which may not even be pshat in the pasuk, but reflects Chazal's interpretation. Arami Ovedavi. Right? We know that's a famous pasuk in Kisava, which we recite in the Haggadah, and we expound upon that entire parsha. That's what the bulk of Magid is about darshaning the parsha of Arami Ovedavi. What do the words Arami Ovedavi mean? So what do they mean in the Haggadah? How does the Baal HaHaggadah understand the expression Arami Ovedavi? BK Shlach Ores HaKol, which means it sounds like Arami refers to Lavan, and Oved Avi is what he tried, it means he destroyed, tried to destroy my father. Which means from a punctuation perspective, it should be Arami, comma, Oved Avi. If you're going to put a comma, if you're going to put a comma at all. We, in an English sense, we won't put a comma. But if you're talking about which is the bigger, and as is the subject and as the predicate, Arami, Oved Avi. Now, the problem with that, as many of the Mefarshim pointed out already, is that the word Oved is intransitive. It's not supposed to act on somebody. And it also would not mean he wanted to destroy. The Targum does translate, like the Baal HaGadah, Be'o Le'ovada, Beis Ayin Aleph, which means Ba'i, to want. He wanted to destroy. And that's the same interpretation we have in the Haggadah. But the Rishonim point out already, some of them, the Pashtanim, Ibn Ezra Rashbam, that Oved doesn't act on something else. And it wouldn't mean to try either. Now, what does the word Oved mean? Oved means straying or lost. Se Oved haya ami. Right? It was a wandering or lost sheep, was my nation. So Ibn Ezra and Rashbam both say, Arami Oved, a wandering Aramean, Avi, was my father. Which means that the comma goes after Arami Oved. Now, I'll tell you what the trup is. The trup is Pashta Munasa Kekatam, which we would read, Arami Oved Avi. The comma is after Arami. Mm-hmm. If the trup, if you were following Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, the trup would have been Arami Oved Avi Mapach Pashta Zakev Katam. In this case, the Bali Masora, when they put the trup on the Psukim, they were choosing the interpretation, and the Bali Masora, you know, were, let's say, between the year 500 and 1000, the Tiberian Master reads, the choice of trup reflects the interpretation of the Targum of the Baal HaHaggadah. So the trup often reflects a certain kind of interpretation, and there's a choice. And sometimes the way we have the trup is not pshat, because the Bali Masora were trying to incorporate the rabbinic reading. So here,
I just ask one question.
Sure.
Is there a difference between the Ashkenaz and the Sfarad?
Music may be different, but the trup is the same. The symbols...
The same tikkun.
Correct. The names, when not in the Chumash itself, but in the back, when they give names to the trup, sometimes there are slightly different names for the same trup. But the trup itself, both the symbols and the level of pause, the punctuation is identical. Okay. It's just the music, you know, and maybe sometimes the names of the trup that differ. So I'm going to give. This is the following pasuk the Gemara is about to interpret. You don't have the pasukim. This is the Shem, the pasukim on the side.
No.
Losas. Yeah, the Torah or yes, you do. You have. Is it Losas Soniti?
Torah.
Yeah. So if you look on your Gemara, on the bottom left, you see the pasuk Losas Soniti Eloichesav Elohezahav Losasulachem. So I never get to do this. I'm going to do an experiment now. Okay. Tell me. Look at that pasuk. I didn't plan on this, but look at that pasuk. Okay, I'll translate the words. Lo sasun iti Eloi chesef Eloi hesahav lo sasu lachem. You shall not make with me gods of silver and gods of gold. You shall not make for yourself. Now, look at. I just gave you. I try not to bias things. If you were to look at that pasuk, where does the comma go? Take a moment and look at that pasuk. What is the nature of that pasuk? And as where does the comma go? And how does that tell us how to sort of understand the pasuk and the subjects and the pronouns and the verbs and so on?
Places.
What's that?
You could put it in two different places.
Josh, where do you want to put it?
I don't know where, but here's where you could put it.
Okay.
You could either put it after E.T.
Okay.
Or Zahav.
Right. Now, Adrian, where do you put it?
I would put it after Kesef.
Absolutely. Kesef. Neither way you're presenting it makes any sense as a sentence.
Lo tasun E.T. Elohe Kesef, Elohe Zahav, Lo tasu lachem.
Lo tasun E.T. does not... Don't make with me.
I don't know what went before.
Well, I'm asking... No. This is the whole pasuk. This pasuk is self-contained. There's nothing else before or after that's going to give you really a clue here. And the previous pasuk is, Moshe says to the Jewish people, or God says, Moshe says in God's name, Atem re'isem kimen ha-shamayim di-barti imachem. You saw me speak to you from the heavens. It's a warning about not making idols. Right? So now this pasuk stands on its own. So if you read Lo Sasun Iti, don't make with me, What? And if you say losat suniti eloi chesle zahav, that makes sense. But then what's losat sulachem? It's extra. Adrian hit the nail on the head. I never realized this because I was so influenced by the trap and maybe by the rabbinic reading. Told Professor Moshe Bernstein once commented to me. He said, "This is it's unusual because it's law and nonetheless it's in poetic style. Losat suniti eloi chesef." It's ABBA, it's a chiasmus, okay, which is something you typically get in poetry. You don't usually get this in law, right? The normal formulation in law would have been losasuniti eloi chesef alei zahav, period. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have had the last part. So, it's, but this that is the pshat, absolutely the pshat. So I'm glad, I mean, I wish, how many people, by the way, picked up on one of these two readings?
But to me, whenever there's a vav, the and is a sign for a pause or a comma.
Yes and no, it depends on the context. Because I would say, kochela v'chol, take this one, kochela v'chol dam lo sochelu. Right, the vav is just the conjunctive vav there.
Yeah.
Right, that's not the pause.
Probably that's more the, that's the more.
That's probably the more common ones. How many people actually thought about Adrian's reading it, if you thought one way?
No, I thought about it, but I know that it's not the way.
Okay, you're right, so you're biased already. It is unquestionably, that's the pshat. But how do Chazal read? So they pick for your first reading, Josh. They read, I'll read you the trup. Lo sasun iti, it's an esnachta. Elohe chesef, velohe zahav, lo sasu lachem. Now let me tell you what the Chazal's interpretation is now. Elohe chesef means making kruvim, even though we make kruvim, which was engraved on the divine throne, if you make him out of silver, it's an avodah zarah. You only make two out of gold on the aron. That's it. And then, if you make more than two, even though you make them out of gold, that's Ve'lo Hezahav. That's Lo Sasu Lachem. So you can't make Kruvim out of Kesef, you can't make more golden Kruvim. What do you do with Lo Sasun Iti? So the way they're reading it is Lo Sasun Asher Iti. They add in the pronoun. You shouldn't make that which is with me. What is that which is with me? The images that are with God in heaven, you may not make them. Now, what's with God in heaven? So, for the moment, what you're going to say is that the Kisei HaKavod had on it a Nesher, an Aryeh, a Kruv, and an Adam, I think. A Kruv is not clear what it is. It might be a young child. Adam is a person. A Nesher is a griffin vulture, and a Aryeh is a lion. Okay, so you would assume that it refers to that. You might also say it refers to the heavenly luminaries, because those are with God in the heavens as well. But they read lo sasun iti, lo sasun asher iti. That's really what they don't, you won't see that word in the Gemara, but as look at the drasha, the Gemara says, if you're talking about ants. Now let's bring it back to where we were. It when the Braisa says that you're not allowed to make all sorry, it doesn't I put this I shouldn't have said that when it says that all mazalos are mutarn except for mazal cham olavana, so the Gemara says as follows: if it refers not to you're finding something but you're actually making it, you're shaping it, so the Gemara says kala mazalos mishari, are you allowed to make any of the mazalos v'haksiv lo sasun iti, which means lo sasun kidmus shamshai hamishamshim lefana b'amaron, you may not make the image of those servants that serve me in the celestial spheres. Right? That's lo sasun asher iti. So it means not only moon and the sun, you can't make Aries, and you can't make Virgo, and you can't make Pisces, and any of the things. You can't make any of the images found in the heavens. So when we say that kol ha mazalos hamutarim, except for the sun and the moon, it can't mean mutar to make. Okay? By the Gemara, at the end of this Sugya, starting on the bottom of the next Amma, Megillah, is going to talk about all the details of what images one may make, what images one may have, and so on. We'll talk about it eventually. But for the moment, we have to discuss two-dimensional, three-dimensional, and so on and so forth. You know, but for the moment, the point is that the prohibition cannot be, you cannot be saying that the prohibition of Tzura is limited to Tzura's Chama Levana amongst the Mazalos if you're talking about making the image yourself, because that you're not allowed to make anything that's found in the celestial spheres. Ella, it must be pshita bimotze. It must be, if you find a kli and it has a mazal on it, all klelim are mutarim, all mazal are mutarim, except for sun and moon. Uchaditran, our mishnah hamotze klelim, aleim tsuris chama, tsuris levana, tsuris darkon, yolichon leyama melach. Fine. Now the Gemara says, Ibn Motze, but if you're right, that it's talking about motze, ima mitziyasa. Let's look at the second of Rav Sheshis' rules. Kola partsufos mutarim. Chutz mi partzuf Adam. So it's talking about if you find the kli with the partzuf Adam on, so even before you read the next line, is the kli mutar asur?
Asur.
No.
It's asur. It says you could do everything besides the...
I know, but if we're talking about motze here, according to the Mishnah, is it mutar asur? It's mutar, it's not listed. The Mishnah is talking about motze. It says chama levan and darkon.
Only those two.
It's listing across categories. It's not limited to the mazalos categories because it lists darkon. And therefore, presumably, according to the Mishnah at least, Hamotze parts of Adam on a Kli is going to be mutter, by the argument from silence. So
I thought this was all a qualification.
No, this is not related to the Mishnah. Rav Sheshis is collecting rules from wherever. He's collecting from Brisas and so on. So when his first clause, he said, all mazalos are mutter except for sun and moon. All imit faces are mutter except for faces of people. All animals are mutter except for dragons. So when he said that all mazalos are mutter except for sun and moon, it has to mean if you find a kli, it's mutter to get hana from it. Fine. Now, if the first part of Rav Sheshis didn't say whether it was motze or ose, he didn't say whether it's you find or you make it. But we presume that the first clause has to be motze because otherwise it would be wrong. Now we get to the second clause. Presumably right now we think, well, maybe that's motze as well. But that's wrong because if the iser of partzuf only being on a person is talking about motze, well, if you find a part, according to the Mishnah at least, if you find a kli with a part of Adam on it, it's permissible because the Mishnah doesn't say it's prohibited. So Rav Sheshis can't be talking about motze in the second clause. So the Gemara says, Ibn motze, ema mitziyasa, kol ha-partzuf ha-mitzatam, chutz mi-parts of Adam. But Ibn motze, parts of Adam, yasur, if you're talking about finding a parts of, how can you say it's asur? Ha-tanan, ha-motze, kein levalayim. Tzuras chama, tzuras levana, tzuras darkon, yulichem yamamach. Tzuras darkon in, parts of Adam low. Only dragon. Ela pshita ba'osa. It must be that the second clause, the second of Rishashis' rules, must be to make it. As you can make any face, except for a person. Now the Gemara says, Eima Seifa, let's go to the third clause. Kol ha-tsuros mutaros, chutz mitzuros darkon. Every image is prohibited except for the image of a dragon. V'i be'ose, if you're now going to say, that, all right, the first clause was motze, but the rest of Rav Sheshis' list was ose. So if it's be'ose, tsuros darkon mi'asir, it's not asir to make the image of a dragon. V'aksid lo sasuniti eloi chasav alei zahav. Hani in, Suras Darkon low. There's no prohibition to make it Suras Darkon. So Ela Pshita Bemotze. It must be in the Seifa that you find. You find a Kli, and there's an image of an animal, and there's only one image that's Asur. What's that? Suras Darkon. So then what emerges in Rav Sheshis' rules is that Reisha Seifa Bemotze Mitziyasa Beose. That's bizarre. You know, the Gemara will pose a stira between the Reisha and the Seifa, the first half and the second half of a Braisa, and sometimes the Gemara will say Tavr, they'll break it up, they'll say the Reisha is Rabbi Meir, the Seifa is Rabbi Yehuda. We try to usually make it uniform and give some type of kimta, some type of explanation, but it's common to say at least that the Reisha is this way, the Seifa is that way. Here it's highly unusual to say A, B, A, like make up your mind. Like, which is it going to be? Why did Rav Sheshis formulate a statement in such a way that's so confusing? So Amar Abaye in, yeah, it happens. Reisha v'seifa b'motzei mitziyasa ba'osa. That's what Abaye says. But Rava wasn't satisfied with that. Rava Amar, kula b'motzei. Nope. He says, it's all talking about if you find it. So the problem is that the Mishnah fails to list parts of Adam. The Mishnah says, chama levana, which is the Reisha, darkon, which is Rav Sheshis' Seifa, but it fails to list parts of Adam as being osir if you find it on a kli. So the answer is, umitziyasa Rabbi Yehuda. It's a different Tana. In other words, Rav Sheshis wasn't working within our Mishnah. He was following a different sheet than the Tanaim. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, Mosif, Aftamus, Meinika, Visarpas. It's not clear what the gear says here. I've not had the chance. You can go, I'm sure that there's some Roman god or something like that. But he says if there's the image of a nursing woman or a Sarpas or Sarapis, so Meinika, so then Rabbi Yehuda says it's Aser. Why? The Gemara explains, Meinika zal shem chava, sheminika kol ha'olam kulo. The nursing woman represents the Eve, who basically is the mother of all of the world, and therefore that suggests, again, power over the world. And Sarafis is al shem Yosef, is named for Yosef, shesar, umefis is kol ha'olam kulo. Sare sum means, Rashi says, he became a sar. He's playing off the samach and the sin. You could say sar, he went away from his family. The hafis is kol olam. He appeased the entire world, meaning he sustained the entire world during the famine. Okay, so this would represent Avodah Zarah. Kimidumani, if I can have the chutzpah to say so, I wonder, I suspect that these, in fact, were idolatrous images, but I suspect that the interpretation that's being offered in the Bryce is a drush. It's hard for me to imagine that the Romans, or the Greco-Romans, as their gods and goddesses, were thinking about either Chava, who does not belong to their creation story, nor certainly Yosef. I don't doubt that these, in fact, were worshipped, that these images were worshipped, but I think the explanation given, Kedarkam Bakodesh v'Chazal, is a little bit of homiletics in terms of how it comes to be Avodah Zarah. I don't question that, in fact, Rabbi Yehuda was observing a phenomenon that he saw and thought was really Avodah Zarah. The explanation is drush a little bit. Yeah.
Isn't it possible that what he's referring to is not the Greco-Roman, but that the Jews themselves worship?
I suspect not. I mean, you're talking about a syncretistic worship then.
Yeah, because there's clearly a lot of evidence that the Jews worship.
So I'll tell you why not. Because the assumption, again, it's not proof, but the assumption of everything that we're talking, everything in the Mishnah we're talking about until now was of a Zarah Shel Goy, something that has bittul. Right? In this case, the assumption is these things are also minastam because they're worshipped. Right? But if it were things that only Jews worshipped, it would go to sort of a second. It's not proof against your suggestion, but it means it's in a totally different category. And it's not also because no one was mavatalit, or because of an assumption. It's also because you know when you see this image that it must be also because it by definition is avodah zarah for Jews, right? Any Jew who's making this, it's not Lenoy.
You glossed over something that if we take it literally, it would be like a commandment, right? If you find any of these images on a pot somewhere, you have to take them to Yam HaMelech. So we should be walking around, and if you see this, you should pick it up, collect it, and it's now a task for us.
That is the din in the Mishnah. Today, I mean, we don't encounter this terribly much today, but you have to take it, you have to dispose of it in a way that people will not get hanoi. You don't technically, I don't think it's examined or abundant, you must be molech liyam ha-melach, but you'd have to destroy it and bury it in a way that no one would be likely to be nichshal and get hanoi from the Avodah Zarah.
So it is literal, you have to do it, not...
I think that there may be alternatives, but yes, it is literal. In other words, the fear was that if you toss it into a regular sea, it's not going to corrode, it's not going to, totally disappear. Okay, and now the Gemara adds one qualification, though. V'had denakat geryua v'kakayil. V'had denakta bein v'kaminika. These two idols are only asur if they are holding... a garyua is some type of, I think, a measuring instrument, and the kakayo means he's measuring. Yosef was measuring out the grain for the people who were buying. And the woman is only asura if she actually has a baby that she's actually nursing in that image. Mm-hmm. It sounds more like a Jesus statue, no? No, doesn't. Yeah. That's my image, sort of the latter one. I don't know what the first one is. Right, a Mary holding Jesus statue. That's what it sounds like. It'd be interesting. Which Rabbi Yehuda, I don't know how early that iconography actually was. That's Rabbi Yehuda is late 2nd century CE. So late Christianity certainly is formed, but I don't know when this iconography in Christian art and so on actually became common.
Joseph.
Oh, that's very clever. That would be very, very, very clever, right? That's almost, but that's like crossing two Josephs. That's very interesting. I didn't think about that. Okay. Anyway, okay. So that's where the Gemara leaves this. Let me finish one more line, and we'll wait for the story till next time, which is Tanu Rabbanan, Ezu Itzuras Darkon. What is this shape? A dragon is a serpent. So not every snake was asur. So Peirush Reb Shimon ben Elazar, Koshe Yishlo Tzitzin Bein Prakov. Only if it has like wings, or tzitzin are like fins, between its joints. And then the Gemara adds, Mechavi Rabbi Yassi Bein Pirkei Tzavar. I didn't Google images, but I'm sure you do, where the dragons, things are sticking out in its neck. So that's, if that makes it a dragon. If it doesn't have these tzitzin, so then it's just a snake and it's not assumed to be asur. Amar Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina Halacha Rabbi Shimon Ben Elazar, which as Tosas points out, Rashbam was bothered by it. It's a little odd because the Gemara has an expression. Whenever the Gemara says Halacha Ke'ex, sometimes the Gemara will ask the kasha, halacha mechlal de pligi. If you're ruling like X, it means because somebody disagrees. Yeah. The Gemara often asks that as a question when they think there's no argument between two chachamim, and when you say halacha k'X, the Gemara says halacha mechlal de pligi. You assume that that action is a machlokas and we're passing that way. So Rashbam here was bothered by the question that little Tosis, the second Tosis says, Perish Rashbam, vafilu imashkachas tana de palik. Should you happen to find some brisa somewhere with a tana who disagrees, the Rishim Elazar, halacha k'Rav Shimon Elazar, right? It's a kletch, but that's what Rashbam was bothered by, because there's nothing in the sugya to indicate that anybody disagrees with the Rishim Elazar's description and qualification exactly of what makes something a tzuras.com.
It's a stretch.
Okay. I understand why. Okay. Very good.